afternoon and welcome to the next edition in our conversation series with the Episcopal Herald. We are an online magazine that strives to imagine, articulate, and analyze the future of the Episcopal Church. You can find us online at episcopalherald.com or on Facebook or Twitter at Episcopal Herald. We're coming to you live this afternoon from Salt Lake City, General Convention of the Episcopal Church, and I am pleased to be here with two individuals who work with the Anglican Communion Office out of the Episcopal Church. So I'm going to let them introduce themselves and just give you a brief synopsis of what they do.
Hello, my name is Rachel Chardon. I am the General Program Administrative Officer for the Anglican Communion Office at the United Nations in New York.
I'm Marnie Dawson Carr, and I have long been associated with the Anglican Communion Office in New York, the Anglican Communion Office of the UN, and also have been associated with many facets of work in the Anglican Communion, specifically with refugees and migration and humanitarian assistance.
So for our listeners at home, would you ladies tell us what exactly does that mean, the Anglican Communion Office and refugee migration? What kind of work does that encompass that the church is involved in?
The Anglican Communion was credentialed in 1985 to the Economic and Social Council as an NGO, non-governmental organization, associated with the work of the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations. The office itself was established for convenience sake at the Episcopal Church Center, but representing the entire communion, which is in 165 countries, in about 1990. And the first Anglican observer at the UN was Archbishop Sir Paul Reeves, who was not only Archbishop of New Zealand, but at another time Governor General of New Zealand. Since then, we've had several observers from different parts of the world and several representatives doing the work of the office, which is basically in the areas of humanitarian assistance in association with the organizations at the UN who carry that out. But I think we should also point out that we as a global church of some 85 million people present at the grassroots as well as in the corridors of power have been able to actually influence the agenda of the United Nations. This was before Rachel's time, and she's been basically running the office for the last 6 years. But way back when, in about 1991, Sir Paul Reeves introduced the question of the suffering and unequal treatment of indigenous peoples to the agenda of the UN. He himself was 1/8 Maori from New Zealand. And that has become a major topic of concern. There have been other topics that we have raised and brought to the forefront. One has been the whole subject of the degradation of the environment, which he also raised up to be of major importance at the UN. And there's a United States priest, Jeff Gollier, who has been with our office ever since those early days, who started the Anglican Communion Environmental Network, and who is really the great expert in that field, not only for the Anglican Communion, but he's actually led the other non-governmental organizations of the UN on that topic. So those are two areas from the very get-go that we've had a great deal to do with. I think a third area of very high significance for us, and I'll let Rachel talk about this, is our concern about the status of women around the world and the need to address the subjects of violence against women, equal opportunity, et cetera, et cetera. But Rachel's been very engaged in that program.
Thank you. Every year we write a letter to all the primates and we ask them to nominate a woman after we indicate what the priority theme is going to be for the year. And they send a woman from and we're addressing a global map. And we've had women from Africa, Kenya. We've had Haiti. We have the Church of England. We have
all the continents.
Central.
The world,
really. I mean, yes, all the continents. And these women come for 2 weeks
to the
Commission on the Status of Women. And together we go to the parallel events and side events. And we get together and we try to teach them a number of different means to help themselves. And they become like sisters, and they hear their individual stories of persecution in their countries. And at the end of the two-week series, they have bonded, and they go home to their communities with resources to help the others that are there.
And I think one of the things we bring to the Commission on the Status of Women, which is now about to be in its 60th year,
having our 60th commission next year.
At the United Nations, it's a major commission that addresses the status of women globally. One of the things we bring is that we can bring representatives from countries who normally cannot send representatives. In other words, poor nations who wouldn't have the capacity, or those women who wouldn't have the capacity to come and really tell the true story of what's happening to women. Obviously, the whole subject of violence, abuse, many, many, many topics. From, I remember 30 years ago, one of the major topics was polygamy and the problems that that caused women. We've now migrated to other things, but one of the very major topics, which has become a subject of great import to not only the Episcopal Church, but the Roman Catholic Church, and that's the whole subject of human trafficking and human sexual trafficking, slavery and trafficking. And most recently, about a year ago, I guess, the Pope Francis I and the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, announced a joint effort to eradicate human trafficking. And this is called the Global Freedom Network, and it's primarily funded by a very devout Anglican billionaire from Australia. His name is Andrew Forrest.
And Archbishop Sir David Hoxton was with us at this
from
recent,
the Angleton Center.
From the Center
of Rome.
And he was a speaker for this past CSW.
So one of the things that many of our listeners at home may not realize is exactly what the Anglican Communion is. But as you mentioned, Marnie, at the beginning, it's our global faith home. It is the church to which we belong, to which we are a part of.
It's the great legacy of the British Empire.
that too.
You know, the setting up of basically, as countries became independent, their Anglican churches became independent.
Right.
Of course, we did. You'll notice that this is the 230th anniversary of the General Convention. We became independent from Britain, from England, in 1785.
Churches
have become independent. So you have the Church of South Africa, and so
there
are 38 different so-called provinces or churches globally, many of them are comprised of only one country, that form the Anglican Communion, and they're each headed by an archbishop. And the Archbishop of Canterbury is prima inter pares, the first among equals.
Correct. So, and then having just described a lot of the work you all are doing, or the office is doing, the Anglican Communion is doing, what is your hope for the future of the Anglican Communion? I know there are often questions about disagreement theologically, but the work that you all have just described is vitally important for saving lives. And so what would be your hope for the future of the Anglican Communion?
Well, I think the world needs the Anglican Communion. The Anglican Communion has a great deal to give, not only gifted individuals, but a theology that allows for diversity and allows for mutually conflicting ideas to coexist within the whole. And I think that's one of our great gifts. It leads to our gift of promoting reconciliation, etc. And I think through the UN, we can give those gifts. In fact, I think it's incumbent upon us to do it and to step up to the world scene, so to speak, and give our gifts, such as they are, to others to make a better world. And this is particularly true in this current world that is so destabilized with so many failed states, etc. One has to remember that the church is present at the grassroots in all of these places. It's very interesting because in the last 20 years, there's been a dynamic at the United Nations that I think has tried to lessen the influence of the non-governmental organizations in the UN, because quite frankly, often diplomats or busy being diplomatic to each other and fail to criticize other states for their violations of human rights. And it includes plenty of things the United States has done wrong, so I'm not saying we're above anybody else. But it is true that it's the non-governmental organizations who will often point out these faults or the things that need to be remedied, let me put it that way. And so frequently there's a tendency, it has been a tendency of the UN to underplay that and not to have that voice be heard too much because it's inconvenient. But recently there's been the beginning of a sea change, and that is the UN organizations that are on the front lines that are trying to address the human tragedy of 51 million refugees globally and huge numbers of displaced people and all the horrors that are going on. They've realized that if they just go in and do it and leave, it's not permanently addressed. But they've begun to recognize that they have to use organizations that are present in those areas and will be present once the immediate aid is no longer available.
Sure.
And have to be trained at that time to carry forward to really address the difficult situations, the wrongs, the wounded.
Really talking about transformation,
exactly.
Not just temporary aid.
But the point is, the United Nations organizations within the last year have begun more and more approaching the church and saying, we would like you to please carry out these programs with our money, because we feel that if you can do it, it would be more lasting on the ground. One of the problems in the past has been when the UN comes in with a big aid program, they'll often take church workers and use them as drivers or interpreters or whatever. When they leave, there's no structure in place.
Sure.
So they've come to recognize that if they use the church structures in a much more cohesive and constructive way, they can leave a permanent answer rather than just to fix it and leave and have it devolve into mayhem again.
Absolutely. For a young priest in the church, for all of the lay leaders, for all of the ordained leaders in the church, how can we help? What can we do? What can our role be in ensuring that this work continues?
Well, I mean, we're always looking for assistance, volunteers. And at one time, I think it was in the early start of the office, didn't we have brothers?
We had priests.
And Jeff Gallier, who's one of my colleagues, he's a priest. So we're always saying, you know, we want to reach out, and if anybody wants to come and share with us what we do and assist us, that would be great.
I think there's also a proclivity, for whatever reason, to be very critical of the United Nations. But I think we have to recognize that there are multilateral organizations in place, and it's the best we have. And perhaps instead of just being critical, we can help to make them better. There's obviously funds that are needed. Education is very important. And I think if parishes and dioceses are concerned about what's happening with terrorism being exported everywhere and everything else, it would be a good idea to look at what the global systems are that can be utilized to try to contain some of this and address the root causes.
And so the best way for us to do that is to go through the Anglican Communion office through the National Episcopal Church. Is that right?
Well, this is not through the Anglican Communion office of the United Nations. It's housed in the Episcopal Church
Center. We're separate entities.
And the Church Center has been very generous in offering us space. But we represent the Anglican Communion all of the 38 provinces.
The U.S. Church is part of the provinces.
Right.
It's one of the 38 provinces.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
Great. But as is the Anglican way, when there's a program carried out in a certain area, usually the host diocese or the host province will reach out and welcome whomever it is who's coming to do work in that area or throughout the world.
Anything else you all would like to add?
I just wanted to say that it has been a very exciting 6 years. what I see going on in the office, what I see going on at the UN, sometimes is exhilarating and sometimes sad. I attend the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Peoples every year. It's usually in May. And when I go there, I hear the stories of some of these women who have been persecuted, hands cut off, and, you know, just really not regarded at all. But then there are other times that I see the great strengths of these women that go back to their communities and do wonderful things.
Marnie and Rachel, thank you for your witness. Thank you for your work. And thank you for taking the time to talk with us this afternoon. It's a really important part of imagining the future of the church. So we really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.